This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and...
What?
Over? Did you say over? Nothing's over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no. It ain't over now, because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Autel, Pico Technology, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. Sponsored by Independent Wrench Jobs, tech-only jobs, no runaround. Built by Technician Find, helping tech since 2017. Join free at IndependentWrenchJobs.com. Today's episode, I guess inspired a little bit by a friend of my wife and mine, a friend of ours, and that's not like a mafia reference, that we met, it's really not that long ago, a couple years ago. My wife had worked with her on-again, off-again significant other, the father of her three kids, and he was in the substance use world, working also as a kind of a counselor. Unfortunately, he relapsed. If you've listened to many of the episodes about substance use disorder or addiction, I say something and it's rough. It's rough to say because you can unwittingly license people and it sucks. Unfortunately, it's true. Nobody wants to go through a recovery. Nobody wants to live in recovery and work programs and relapse. It's just hard to really talk about relapse realistically without feeling like you're enabling somebody an out. But there's some truths that have to be dealt with. One is, if you relapse, you're not starting over from square one. That's a joke. That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Like falling off the wagon, now you're starting all over. If you were in recovery for a day, you were in recovery for a day. That day isn't gone. If you are in recovery for a few months, for a few years, whatever, all that work, all of that does not just evaporate. So but that's one thing. You're not starting over. Another harsh truth is with some of the substances being used, depending on what that is, and I think you can all kind of get there, relapse can be deadly. Part of it is what's in the stuff nowadays, particularly fentanyl. The other thing is just if you've been using for some time, you develop quite the resistance, if you will. There are many examples of people who've been using certain substances, maybe opioids we'll pick on, where their daily intake, or not even daily, just some of the doses they're taking are enough to kill large animals. And that's not kidding, and I don't know if it's necessarily something anyone feels good about. I think it's a lot of times they're not even looking to get high, if you will. They're just looking to feel normal. Imagine that. So finally, you've had enough. You go into recovery and usually start working your program, all that. And time goes by. We don't have to come up with the scenario, but it gets to the point where for whatever reason, you've arrived at a situation where you're now going to use again. I don't know how aware and maybe even cognizant you will be when you're in that situation, but if you are, and I cannot urge you enough to try not to use every resource you can not to, but if you do and you can be aware, just don't go back to the same dose you were using the last time you used. Use a fraction. A fraction of it. You know, you see what I mean? Like, that's rough to say that, but people are dying because, one, the stuff they're getting is dosed with usually fentanyl. And then the other thing is that you go back to what you know, and unfortunately, now it's an overdose. And that's what happened to this gentleman. The real unfortunate part is he had twins with this friend of ours and a daughter that's a very similar age to our youngest. And after it happened, honestly, even before it happened, my wife was kind of reaching out to him and her to just try to hang out a little bit. And, you know, because kids at the same age, you know, we didn't have babies like that, but we're all in the kind of the similar age group, stuff like that. And he unfortunately overdoses and passes away, leaving her with three kids, two newborn twins. And my wife reached out to her. I don't know. It just kind of started out a little bit of hanging out, a little bit of babysitting, and now it's a full-blown friendship. The reason I bring this all up, the reason this is, you know, in my mind, episode worthy is she's a single mom. And don't get me wrong, I don't think she's all alone. I think she has a lot of help, but I think she's overwhelmed. Who wouldn't be, right? I mean, come on. But she's a full-time job and kids to raise, especially two little ones with at least no consistent daily, nightly help with them, taking care of them. They're now, you know, toddlers. It's a lot. They're active. When they're not your kids, they're great. They're fun. But for her, yeah, it's hard, right? It sounds like I'm delaying here or beating around the bush, and maybe I am, but it's not on purpose. She really rejects being called strong because in her mind, she's drowning or feels like she's drowning. This could go down a different road, different discussion, but I guess I really don't want to. That would be a much better conversation to have with Margaret or even Danielle on, that we could go down that road at a different time. I want to focus on this perception of strength. In her mind, when she's told she's so strong, being reassured and rejecting it is this idea that being strong is having it all together. Being strong is being able to do all the things. I can't disagree more. It doesn't have to be a contest. It doesn't have to be we talk about the trauma Olympics. This isn't so much that, but this is almost like the definition Olympics of what defines strong. Her case, she feels it's somebody would be able to spin all the plates, keep them all spinning, keep everybody happy, pay the bills, work, get by on a few hours of sleep, and have some sort of a social life. Get out there and some, I guess, self-care time. Which I don't discount. Like, that's extremely important, but you got to be able to afford it. Her chosen self-care and is golf, and something that she and my wife and I go do regularly, or I guess semi-regularly. That takes money. It takes time, right? Nine holes still takes some time. And you got the gear and the greens fees and all that, and it adds up. It can be a stressor. But I find people that hold on by their fingertips strong, like insanely strong. I mean, there's a movie kind of, big surprise. This just popped into my head. I wish I had this better fleshed out. But there's a movie with Kevin Costner and Ashton Kutcher called The Guardian. It's about rescue swimmers in Alaska. I thought it was with the PJs, but it's really the Coast Guard rescue swimmers. And there's just a scene where Ashton Kutcher's just like a superstar swimmer. He was going to go to college for swimming, maybe even the Olympics. And life events happen. I don't want to give away the plot. But he goes into the Coast Guard to become a rescue swimmer, where the Kevin Costner character, who is generally accepted as the greatest ever, who holds many, many records in the Coast Guard for swimming and whatnot, for rescue swimmer training. These records are being destroyed by Ashton Kutcher's character, and he's got a little bit of a ego and chip on his shoulder. Understandably, young. He's sitting at the local hangout, a bar, and the bartender, owner of the bar, older lady, who has a really brilliant monologue, if you will, about getting old. And I highly recommend watching the movie, if only for that. And this part where she's kind of, you want to talk like impressive feats? Here, I have one. And during a rescue, Kevin Costner's character is pulling somebody out of the water up into the helicopter. Winch, electric winch, gives out. And he's left dangling, holding on by hand. One hand holding the other hand or two hands of a sailor or somebody, survivor. And it's a long trip back to base. He holds on the whole time and does damage to his hands, his fingers, tendons, all torn up, all wrecked. He held on through all that pain. Was that strong? I mean, that sounds pretty freaking strong. Just gritting through it. I understand this is a fictitious situation. Maybe it's based off an actual event, or loosely based, or slightly exaggerated. I don't know. It's not unrealistic, I guess. People do some amazing things. So is that strong to hold on through all of it, to keep going? Or would strong have been not only hold on, but then kind of, I don't know, wind your hand up in that braided cable until you ended up close enough to the helicopter entrance to, you know, the side door to lift that person in? That would have been pretty strong too. Physically strong. Holding on's nothing either. That's strength and will and all the things. In life, if you're holding on, just not willing to give up, and just keep doing what you need to do to keep as many of the plates spinning as you can, is that not strong too? I think it is. I don't think it has to be more strong, or whoever just powers through and they keep everything spinning with little to no effort. Like, it's just, you know, it ain't no thing. They just do it. That can be strong too. If we're thinking about the shop, and your shop is whatever, just for whatever reason, suffering, it's not doing well. The economy shift, you know, the big splurge or bump we all got from COVID's pretty much long gone. You're just trying to figure it out, but doing what you need to do to keep things going, keep the doors open, keep the employees fed, if you will, keep the paychecks clearing and paying your bills too, like just eking it out. Well, that's pretty darn strong. It isn't just strong to, through, you know, all the conditions, just continually finding a way to be successful. That's not nothing either, but eking it out and holding on long enough to figure out what needs to be done. That's pretty badass. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADAS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. Ever feel like you've got to play politics just to get fed? One guy gets the gravy, you get the garbage, and then the ad says, great culture. Independent Wrench Jobs is a new tech-only community to help you find better independent shops. Fair dispatch, steady work, real leadership, no games. Start with the free salary survey for your city. Shop-by-shop pay, perks, and benefits before you waste another interview. And if you're applying now, use Autotech Resume Pro to generate a resume and shop-specific cover letter in about 2 minutes. Built by Technician Find, serving the industry since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. I think this is kind of implied in a few episodes, but a very recent episode I did with Carm at Vision under the Remarkable Results Radio banner or podcast. Asking for help is not a weakness. In many, many cases, especially in our profession, but I think most, I guess I was going to say male dominated, but I don't think it matters. I think it's just people have a hard time asking for help in general, regardless of the type of help, because they don't want to show weakness. They think it's weak. And yet, how much strength do you have to demonstrate? What do you have to do to finally be able to, in good conscience, ask for help? And I guess I don't want to say in good conscience, like now you, okay, you deserve help. You've reached a point where now you're okay asking for it. You probably should have long before, right? I think that's the argument, is you should have been able to ask sooner. Shoulds, I suppose, pretty judgy. But again, it's this perception. Asking for help is a weakness. And I'm not talking about people that ask for help on every freaking car they drive in, on every social media group, or call tech support, like barely get the car through the door and on the hoist, and they're already calling like, oh, what do you think is wrong with this? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, real help, not abusing it, but you legitimately need help, recognizing it, and then asking for it. That is a lot of strength. There's a lot of strength involved with that. The whole point of all this is just this perception of what's strong. And for somebody who is, by, I think, categorically strong and just able to endure and kind of do what needs to be done, that's a lot of strength involved. And to not be able to hear it or accept it or want to hear it or believe it, to me, is a way of a misdefinition of what it means to be strong. And I also see it in our profession when it comes to help with the business. It's not doing well. And asking for help. Again, I don't know if I necessarily mean just like reaching out to the masses, but arranging for real help. And again, that might be in some cases, the masses, the groups, the professional groups, but also just other friends, shop owners, coaches, even your own people. Having a meeting and asking your people like, hey, you know, I'm looking for ideas, because they're not dumb either, right? They know what the schedule looks like, or they can tell by your demeanor. Sometimes asking them, maybe they got some terrific ideas. And it's back to everybody working together to achieve that common goal of, I presume, maximizing ethical profit. And in turn, the shop, I would like to believe, I could be full of it, is going to try to benefit the employees as much as it can, regardless of what everyone else is doing around them. That's not what dictates what they do. They're going to do as much as they can. And that might be way more than everybody else. And then now you're helping to set the market in a very good way. And same with the employees or technical specialists or mechanical specialists, not just asking a coworker, which I guess I don't want to sound dismissive of, but asking for help on, I don't understand how to do this. And that help might be getting coached through the repair, but maybe more importantly, coached on where to go get the resources, where to go to get the skills, where to go to get the knowledge, and then following through and getting it. And maybe that's going to a class. Maybe that's going to an instructor-led class. Maybe that's going to some virtual classes. Maybe that's some subscriptions. You know, our sponsors, all three of them, have content out there very, very useful content. Autel has their own channel, or multiple channels, to be quite honest. Pico Technology has multiple channels with tons of information in the software itself. And Independent Wrench Jobs has a growing amount of resources, information. And there's so much more, like Remarkable Results or the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. That site has an unbelievable amount of information on it. So reaching out for help, I suppose it's that adage, right? You want somebody to toss you a fish, or do you want them to show you how to fish, or tell you where to go get a nice pole, where to go get bait, maybe some advice on hooks or lures, and then maybe a good guide or where you would get some instruction on where to fish, where you get the information to know where to fish, when to fish, how to fish. If you're going to go after this type in this stream, well, then you really need to be fly fishing. But if you're going to go here and want this type of fish and you're going to be trolling, then you better should be using this type of a pole and this kind of a technique and all this. And, oh, you know, don't do any snagging or whatever. Or in this case, you got to go noodle. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, do you want to know how so that next time you can do it on your own and you have information to pass on to someone down the road that needs it? Or do you want somebody to just get you through and keep getting you through? The real strength is asking for that help and able to accept it the way it comes, right? And doing something about it. So I hope you get what I'm saying. I guess I like to say give credit where credit's due. And a lot of times that means you need to give yourself some credit and recognize when it is due, that there are times you really can kind of pat yourself on the back, or I don't know, at least smile on the inside. Like, I'm weathering this storm. I'm going to come out on the other end. Okay. Maybe a little worse for wear, but I'm going to make it. Or more optimistic, depending on the situation. It doesn't always have to be so freaking dire. And I do sincerely hope that, you know, you can give yourself credit where credit's due. It's great to give other people credit when it's due, and we should be almost anal about it, but also don't hesitate to give yourself some credit, because I'm sure you deserve it. And I am getting a lot of messages about the Mount Rushmore stuff. It's crazy. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoy it. So maybe in closing, I will do another Mount Rushmore. I get it. This is an automotive podcast, but some of these Mount Rushmores aren't automotive related. This one I get. It has to do with my history. With my history of growing up on a farm and my grandparents owning a farm implement dealership. Namely, for this Mount Rushmore, the sales and service of outdoor forestry and garden equipment. Namely, well, I better not name them. Not yet. I've got multiple inquiries about what I think are the best chainsaws. My struggle with the question is, what do you mean by that? Are we talking about the manufacturers? Because if I have to go based off that, the makers, the manufacturers of the power equipment, I would have rattled off not too long ago, Jansrud, or some of you may say Jansrud, and if you're Swedish, you'd say Jansrud. Jansrud, Husqvarna, Steel, and then Dolmar. I don't know that Jansrud's really around anymore. I think it might technically be now called Red Max. I don't know if it's really around anymore. And honestly, when it got bought up by Electrolux AB and combined with Husqvarna, there really wasn't much difference between the two other than color. Jansrud being red and black, Husqvarna being orange, some of them orange and white, some of them orange and gray. Maybe I have to combine them. So it'd be definitely Husqvarna Steel. Dolmar was bought out by Makita, and I don't know if they even really make that saw anymore, those saws. And because we're with four, and to keep Brian Pollock off my back, I have to put Echo on there. The reason I hesitate with Echo is my experience with Echo is extremely limited. The Echos that we dealt with were from arborist companies or tree services that used the bucket saws or the arborist saws. The top handles, if you will. That's really all we saw. It really was. And so I have very, very little to compare to. And I do not know any loggers that use Echo. I don't. Maybe there are. I don't know any. Overwhelmingly, they're Husqvarna and Steel. At one time, Johnsrud, but really Husqvarna and Steel dominate. And then Dolmar was a heavy hitter back in the day. So that would be my four makers of chainsaws. Husqvarna, Steel, Echo, and then Dolmar / Makita. Unless I find out otherwise that Makita and Dolmar, I know Dolmar's bought out, but if Makita's really not making anything, I don't know who I would have as my backup. I don't think Olympic is around anymore. They were a big time saw back in the day. We'll have to go with those. And then with the chainsaw models, that's really rough because how do you compare? What are we going to be doing with them? I have a very, very weak spot for the Johns. So if we're doing a Rushmore of chainsaws, it's very difficult for me not to go with the Johnsrud 2051. It was the first turbo. Husqvarna calls it air injection, where they're pulling the fresh air through the recoil housing through a tube off the flywheel. So the flywheel kind of acts a little bit like a supercharger. Not a lot. They're not running 5 PSI of boost, but it does pressurize the air filter housing area. So that is somewhat sealed. Not super tight. Again, it's not a big boost. But if you run them with the air cleaners off or the air cleaner housing off, they run different. There is a small amount of boost. And the tube kind of hugs the flywheel. Idea being that the centrifugal force, if you will, inertia, if we want to be, you know, technically accurate, will result in the dirt being thrown or debris in the air being thrown kind of away from the flywheel. So the tube really only pulls in or gets fresh, cleaner air pushed into it. And therefore the air filter air cleaner stays cleaner much longer. In many cases, loggers would have to clean air filters every time they sharpen or fueled up, sharpen chains or replace the chain. A lot of them would go all day and not have to touch the air filter. So it made a big difference. And that was really the first saw on the market that I know of that did it. I've heard rumors of like a Pioneer saw that did. I didn't see it. I don't know about it. That would be number one in my book. Just, and also is the first chainsaw my grandparents gave me for helping out one summer. And the thing ripped. We used to cut wood with a coworker of my dad's. We burned wood for heat. He had a fireplace that they burned a fair bit of wood, but he had a little kind of a pull-on chainsaw, older, so it wasn't technically an also a rebadged Husqvarna or Johnsrud. And he wanted to try my saw out, and I had a very difficult time getting it back from him. After that, god dang it. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to run one, but that freaking Steel 500i, what the hell? That thing rips. That thing rips. It's fuel injected and all, and I get it. When stuff breaks, it's expensive. The saw itself is expensive. I think brand new off the shelf, they're like $1,300-$1,400 for a, I don't even think it's 80cc. So you're plunking down a good chunk of change, but that thing rips. The power to weight ratio is, it's really, really insane. After that, man, I don't know how not to put on. It would have started out like the 372 XP Husqvarna, but now it's probably the 572. Again, the power to weight ratios are insane. It'll keep up with that 500i. If you do a little bit of massaging of things, it'll outcut it. Little bit of porting, nothing over the top. They scream. God, they scream. And then after that, I mean, one of the mainstays of most loggers, it's the 066, 660, 661 Steel. Power to weight for a pretty large saw is as good as anything. They were just a heck of a saw. They still are. That would be my Rushmore, and I could change it. It's hurting my feelings not mentioning like the Husqvarna 65 because everybody had one. You know what I mean? Like they're a little bit before my time. There's so many out in circulation and they were just so robust. And you know, by today's standards, they cut slow and they're heavy and the anti-vibe isn't so great, but they served a large segment of chainsaw users very well for a long time. It also hurts my feelings not to put like the John's Reed 601 on there, because that was probably the real introduction of John's Reed into the US market. Before that, the heavy hitters were like Homelite and probably Mac, McCullough. They were probably the heavy hitters back then. Pioneer. The 601 is probably what really got them rolling in the United States, especially the Midwest. I don't know how popular John's Reed was outside of the Midwest, to be quite honest. And still, I mean, the 028 was very popular. So is the 032. That was really, really popular. I know some people out there really want me to say 3120 XP and 880 or 088. They are monstrous, monstrous saws. I don't know anyone that ever really used them out in the woods. They're usually using them for the portable sawmills or setting up a sawmill. That's where they would use them. I don't know too many that were actually out there in the woods with one. Usually they're trying to use the smallest saw that can get it done. That's why the 660 was so popular. That's why the 500i is so popular. That's why the 372 was so popular and the 572. So yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. And you ask me tomorrow or really in about 15 minutes, I'll probably change them. Such is life. So anyways, I hope you got a kick out of that. If you have more ideas for Rushmores, please don't hesitate to shoot me an email at mattvonzelpodcast@gmail.com or shoot me a message on Facebook Messenger. And yeah, let me thank my sponsors, Pico Technology, Autel, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Thank you so much for making this possible. And thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com, because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.